Hello and welcome to Dealcast, the weekly M&A podcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. I'm a business journalist and I've been writing about and talking about M&A for a decade. Today we're hearing about a really interesting Chinese deal that has finally completed. I'm joined by Ed Bernales, who is the M&A editor for Asia Pacific. Hi, Ed. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you and your team have reported that there were some really unusual goings on in the latter stages of this deal. It's a Chinese company that's listed in the US, Holisys, and that's being bought by a Hong Kong private equity firm. The deal has now closed, but it looked a bit iffy at one point. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, so we're talking about the take private of Holisys Automation Technologies, a NASDAQ-listed Chinese company, industrial automation company. And the interesting thing about this deal is about 2 months ago, we picked up on some information suggesting that the CEO of the deal, Changi Wang, who's the founder of this business, Holisys, was deliberately slowing down certain regulatory approvals for the deal. So we reported that he was going very, very slowly with certain Chinese regulatory approvals. He was receiving forms and he was processing them extremely slowly. And this is a deal that was announced in December. The company had agreed to sell to a Hong Kong private equity firm, Ascendant Capital Partners, which had partnered up with Sinopec Capital, which is the venture capital arm of an SOE in China, big one, Sinopec Group. And the deal was expected to close in March, and it was carrying on through April, through up until June, and people were getting very nervous about, you know, whether the deal was going to close. And it emerged that sources told us that the CEO was being very, very slow to comply with regulatory requests for information. So we wrote that documents were sitting on his desk for weeks at a time. And it caused a lot of concern amongst shareholders as to why the CEO of a company that had been, that the board had agreed to sell, why he was seemingly hampering that deal from closing. It's really unusual. And that was it, really. That was our report. It's you hear sometimes of buyers that get remorse, that agree to deals and try to slow them down because they're trying to find ways to get out. But target boards, individual members of target boards who have agreed to a deal, don't do that. But here was an exception.
And in your report, you allude to some of the reasons why he might have been doing that. Can you elaborate, please, and tell me more about that?
This goes, the whole story here starts back in 2021, when this company received, throughout that year, it received a lot of indicative bid interest from private equity firms. A lot of well-known Chinese private equity firms are involved in pitching and going public with bids for this company, indicative bids. They weren't binding agreements, but they were saying, we're willing to buy this company. And that kind of put it in play. And there was a huge amount of interest from shareholders, from hedge funds, and from bankers, and obviously private equity that were looking to buy this company because it was trading in the US at about 2.5 times earnings, whereas comparable companies to Holisys were trading in China at about 10 times their earnings. Everybody could see, if you take this company private with a premium, so the shareholders get some money, and relist it back in China, whoever does that's going to make a huge amount of money.
I'm guessing that was to do with the breakdown in relations between the US and China, and the fact that a Chinese company listed on the US perhaps wasn't so appealing.
Yeah, I mean, for about 10 years now, these US-listed Chinese companies have been slowly returning home. It's called the so-called Chinese ADRs. I mean, these are Chinese-focused companies that are listed in the US. They've been steadily going private there, where they're not loved, not liked, they're not getting proper valued properly. People don't understand them. They trade at low multiples of earnings. Whereas if they come back to the China or even Hong Kong, they can relist there and they will trade at much higher multiples. So there's been this kind of exchange arbitrage trend for the last 10 years or so, where many of these companies have gone private and relisted back home. And that has made the owners, the controlling shareholders, which many of these companies have controlling shareholders, their founders, they've become billionaires. I mean, there's some examples where Mindray Medical is one example. It's a company that delisted for $3 billion in the US and it relisted in China mainland, and it turned the controlling shareholder into Singapore's richest man. He's now based in Singapore. So there's a huge amount of wealth transfer from doing these deals. So yeah, it's the unloved story in the US, return home, relist at higher multiples. And this has been caught, this was part of that.
But given all of that, why was the founder of Holisys so reluctant to sell his business?
Because he wanted to take it private. I mean, he was officially, it's disclosed publicly because this deal has now completed, and there is in the proxy filings for this deal, it discloses the background to the transaction under the SEC rules. And in the background to the transaction, public information that's sent to shareholders in the proxy filing, it reveals that he was part of a buyer consortium at one point. That there's been about, over the last two or three years, there's been about 10 to 12 different buyer groups that have tried, have approached the board to take it private. The CEO, who was the center of our story in trying to delay the deal, he was a member of one of those buyer groups. He has tried to take this company private himself. Why? Presumably, he wanted to retain a company that he founded, he's built up, and make money out of relisting it back in China, presumably. But nonetheless, he was part of a buyer group at one time that tried to, but for whatever reason, couldn't raise financing or whatever, couldn't do the deal. So the main reason why he was perhaps being slow with that paperwork is because the suspicion is he was trying to delay the deal and put his own financing together to do a rival bid.
Interesting, but it is now closed. What did shareholders make of the whole process? Because I'm guessing they weren't too happy about what was going on.
The reason the story is particularly interesting is because he did not own, and his management team, unusually for a Chinese US listed entity, he and his management team did not own a huge amount of shares in this company. Normally what happens is the management team or the founder himself in these US listed Chinese companies, normally they have 20, 30, 40, 50% of the economic rights of the company. They own 20 or 30 or 40, 50% of the shares. Sometimes they own 60, 70, 80, 90% of the voting rights, right? There's two classes of shares. So normally they own lots of economic rights and lots of voting rights. And so basically they're the only people that can really take it private and do this delist, relist at a higher multiple and profit from it. But in this case, it was different. What you had here was a very good company. So what this company does is it's one of the very few companies in China that have license to provide industrial software systems for China's high-speed rail network. So they provide very sophisticated software for trains in China that travel at speeds above 200 kilometers an hour. Right, this is really highly regulated sort of business area to be in, right? And they're one of three companies that do that. They're a serious company. They were trading at, as I said, very low multiples. Their peers in China were trading at high multiples. So what you had was a very good company with management that didn't actually own that much of it. No wonder private equity and some SOEs were interested in 2021 in pitching bids and saying, hey, look, we'd love to take you private and, you know, and do a deal. But in 2022, the company came out and said, nope, we're not going to listen to any of these deals. So everybody's a bit deflated. What the hell's going on? Why not? You're not trading at high multiples. You've got all this bid interest. Why not? If this was a US company, there'd be an auction. You'd do an auction for a company, right? But it's not a US company. It's a US listed company, but it's a Chinese company. And they had a poison pill in the Articles of Association. So the reason it's interesting, what I'm saying is, this should have been an auction.
And how did shareholders voice their concern about that? Did they push for an EGM?
That's the key. So I think in around 2022, 2023, a lot of stuff was going on behind the scenes that we haven't fully understood yet. But we were speaking to lawyers and we were wrestling with this and trying to understand how does this situation get unlocked. And it seems, in hindsight, looking at the background to the merger information that was in the shareholder proxy and piecing together with sources, it seems that a lot of hedge funds bought into this stock and it became something of a hedge fund hotel, basically. And these hedge funds seem to have got some organization together, led by one or two hedge funds in particular. We suspect we know who, but we're not sure. There seemed to be some organization on the shareholder side to say, if we can get to 30% and convince in the Articles of Association, I think it's in the articles, you can call an EGM if you have 30% of the shares of the company. So a bunch of investors, only around that number or more, got together and said, and told the company's advisors, we're going to call an EGM if the management, if the board does not start listening to our desires. This company's not going anywhere. Its shares aren't going anywhere for whatever reason. You've got all these bids coming in. You need to sell this company. And we're going to call an EGM within the laws and we're going to make you do that. And there was a whole battle between the board, between shareholders, because these shareholders were holding ADRs, not actual shares. They had to convert them into actual shares. Lots of little rules, but there was a big battle going on. And eventually, the shareholder group got themselves organized enough to exert enough pressure to convince the company and its advisors that they needed to start listening to shareholders. That's something that I think is going to be examined further. Will have already been examined by many banks already, how they manage, how these shareholders manage to push the company into doing what they need to do. But that's basically what happened in August of last year. And it led to the company capitulating somewhat and saying, okay, fine, we're going to run a sale process.
And that sounds like the big takeaway from the situation.
Yeah, I think so. There's been 50 to 60 Chinese ADR take privates in the last decade, and there's never been an auction for any of them. There wasn't really an auction here, but shareholders managed to put the company in play and get a fairly decent result. And they did it by working around poison pill and by working together and muscling in. And so I think that's the absolute takeaway, that if shareholders in these US listed Chinese ADR companies are to create any value, and I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but if they are to create any value, then absolutely they need to look at this playbook. It's a huge take. I think it's a huge takeaway.
Ed, good to talk to you. Thanks very much. That was Ed Vernales, who's the M&A editor for the Asia Pacific region. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please follow it. And if you're listening through Apple, please rate and review the show. If you'd like to find out more about what we've been talking about on this episode, have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.